Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 237. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I cannot complain, even though Greenville lost all our best players, so yeah, they're all up your way now, so we have nobody left of any fun, but it's all good, it's all good. Happy you'll get to see them, and I'm sure Greenville will get now blown out in the playoffs because they're hosting the playoffs next week against Hickory, who's really good, and they're going to have nobody left, so that'll be fun.
I mean, at least you had him for most of the season.
Yeah.
We only got a couple more series left. I mean, up here we have two more regular season series. They have the current road trip that they're on right now, and then one more homestand next week, and then that's it. So they're not going to make the playoffs, barring some late, you know, last 10-game surge here, but man, it's weird that the minor league season is like coming to a close here. I mean, yeah, we'll have, you know, fall ball and winter leagues and all that, but it's just weird. It feels like we were just getting going back in April, and now it's already second week of September, and, you know, playoffs are going on in some leagues and regular season's wrapping down in others. So it's pretty weird, man. This season has flown by.
I know. I don't know where time went. Like, it's crazy. Every season seems to go a little bit faster, and it's just hard to, it's just, I hate it. In a way, I'm ready for the offseason to be able to, you know, slow down and really evaluate players rather than trying to keep up every night,
right?
Which is great, but it'll be nice to sit down and not have to worry about updated stuff every day, you know, and just
yeah,
truly evaluate the whole season of work.
I know, it's like stuff doesn't change, like stats don't change, you know, everything's kind of set in place, and it is kind of nice, and that's why, you know, that's why I put that disclaimer in whenever I do my, you know, like the February, March prospect or dynasty rankings update. Well, oh, why are you making changes? You know, not, no game's been played. And I was like, well, I had more time to really dig into the players because,
right.
I mean, we can do as much as we can during the season, but with, you know, games always being played and stuff always changing, it's hard to really take the time to dig in as much as we want to. So
yeah,
that will come in the off season, but hopefully we can still get some live looks out in Arizona for a few games, and that'll be fun. Give a nice little, you know, break from games, but then get, that gives us through till you know, spring training and whatnot. But we got one last episode of Dynasty and Prospect Listener Mailbag to do here. We got a lot of good questions, so thank you to everyone that sent in your questions. A lot of, it's a good mix of, you know, Dynasty, you know, MLB kind of questions, and also prospect questions. Several Jason Dominguez questions, and we'll get to those a bit later in the show. But before we get into the first question here, get the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at Roto Clegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty, Prospect, and FYPD rankings. First question here actually goes around our rankings here from our good buddy Martin Sokolsky, who we had on several episodes back here on the Toolshed. He asks, can you discuss your significant rankings difference on Jet Williams, Clegg 96, Cross 14? You want to kick this one off, Chris, and why you have Jet Williams ranked where you do?
Sure, yeah. I'll say he's probably, like, when I do a final update, I'll probably have him, like, 75th. But I saw him for four games last week when they were in town. And, yeah, I mean, like, he's been statistically very, very good. The underlying data, that the power's kind of I mean, it's okay. Like, he's running like a ninth percentile of like 102 miles an hour, which is a little bit below average, but for his age is probably average. But his body is just, I worry so much about this frame being able to perform at higher levels. I mean, he's 5'7" being generous. Yeah. Like, he's listed at 5'6", but I'll give him 5'7" and say, yes, generous, because I stood pretty close to him on the field pregame, getting some pictures and that sort of stuff during warmups, and he's tiny, and he's kind of a little bit plump. Like, he has the body where it looks like he can kind of, you know, it's like not like great weight per se, and that's not how he looks right now, but there's that potential where he can, he has that body where I just don't love it. And ultimately, those guys are such, that body excelling in the majors is such a rare exception. The Altuves are one in a million when you think about players that size. And honestly, you look and everybody's like, oh, his OBP skills are so good. He walked like seven times in the series down here, and I saw like six of those walks in four games, but they were all completely non-competitive at bats. Like, I truly didn't see what Jet Williams' plate discipline actually looked like, because these pitches were not even close to the strike zone. Now, the contact's good. Like, when he makes contact, it's good. He had a lot of pop-ups, actually, a lot of pop flies in the infield and center field. He did have a big home run on Sunday in the final game of that series. I was not at that game, but he did have a big home run there over the Green Monster. But ultimately, you look, and he's kind of like a pretty twitchy athlete. You know, he played shortstop. I think he ends up at second base long term. But I just don't think the power ends up being like a huge part of his game. And I'm really not sure that he's like an elite hit tool type guy. I think he maybe profiles as like a 270 type guy that can hit you 15 home runs at the big league level. And ultimately, I just want to see how he adjusts against better pitching, because he's seeing so many non-competitive pitches. His swing rate's like 30% right now. Like, he doesn't swing the bat at all. And historically, we haven't seen those guys just start swinging the bat more. Like, you look at like Emmanuel Rodriguez, who everybody just wants to swing the bat so bad. It's like, okay, like, this guy's got all the upside in the world. He just needs to swing the bat. Like, the tool sets are completely different here when we look at that. And Emmanuel Rodriguez is still swinging the bat 6% more than Jet Williams is, which is nuts to think about. And so when I think about the future projection, like, throwing aside all the stats like from this year, And just really looking at, like, who does he project to be in the majors? I see him a potential, like, top 75 guy for fantasy. I don't really see that kind of upside to be, like, an elite asset, which is why I kind of land where he is. So, yeah, he will be, like, in my live rankings, he's about 75th, which is probably fair considering the performance. But after the live look, I was just not super inspired. And honestly, like, I talked to a lot of scouts that were there as well, and, you know, there was kind of mixed opinions on what Jett Williams would actually be. Good. He's had an awesome year. Can't discount that at all. But looking at the future projection for fantasy, I'm just not, like, all in per se. Great prospect, but I'm not, like, over the moon about him.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And it's funny, too, because, you know, even though we have a pretty wide, you know, ranking difference here for Jett Williams, I don't disagree with much of what you just said. So I think it boils down to how we value this profile. Someone tweeted at me about Williams and about the power and whatnot. And yeah, I don't think it's going to be a big part of his game either. I think there's potential for more power than what he's shown. But at the same time, I think you're probably going to see, you know, 15 to 18, maybe first to 20 home runs at peak. Maybe he's a year or two where he's like 21, 22, something like that. I don't think he's ever going to be like 25 plus, though. You know, you never know. But at the same time, I think that comes with, you know, an above average or better hit tool. And I think 270 plus is certainly there. I think he could be 280, somewhere in that range. And I think there's, you know, plus speed. Like, I don't think he's going to be a 35, 40 steel guy or anything like that. But I think this is a guy that, given that he has good speed and the fact that his on-base abilities are so good, I think there's 25 to 30 steals there too. So you're maybe looking at a 15 to 18 homer, 25 to 30 steal guy with a good average and good OBP. You know, I think that is a very intriguing profile, and I think there's a fairly high floor for, you know, as high as you can for a guy that's his age. He's given his approach is so strong, doesn't swing and miss too much. You know, the K rate is just a tick over 20% this year. You know, there's a good base to work with here. And if he does start being more aggressive, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be Altuve's. I would never say that. Altuve's been obviously a, you know, all-star player for a long time. But I do think there's a potential for an impact fantasy shortstop that, again, 270 plus, 15 plus, 25 plus. And, you know, and it's funny because I won't say I was low on Williams last year during, like, FYPD rankings, but he wasn't a guy I ranked super high, even though some others around us did. I forget, was it Welsh that was super high on Jett, or was it James Anderson? I forget. Someone else was, like, really high on Jett, and I was like, I don't know. He seems fine, but every time I dig into him, every time I watch him, and I haven't seen him live yet, I'll probably get some live looks at him next year when he gets up to AA Binghamton. Probably starts the year there, or maybe, you know, back at high A, up in AA fairly soon after that. But I think there's a good base of tools to work with here, and he does start tapping into power more as he has recently. If that sticks and he could continue doing that, I think there's, you know, an impactful guy here. So, and maybe I did go a little too high on him. I fully admit that, but I just like the all around skill set that he has and the potential for a little bit more power in the future. Maybe not a lot more, but I just like the all around offensive blend here. So that's why I have him where I do. But I don't think me and Chris disagree on a lot of, like, the long term projections for him. I think it's just how we value this type of profile. I think it's the where we differ right now. All right, moving on. Next is how do Mason Miller and Max Meyer compare to current top pitching prospects? And it's funny because, like, Max Meyer, who we haven't seen in what, a year and a half at this point, he's still a pitching prospect, even though it feels like he shouldn't be. But, and he was probably a back end top 10 pitching prospect or close to it, definitely in that general area before he had to, you know, have surgery. And before I see him, you know, beginning of next year, I'm assuming. So I think, you know, I haven't really moved my ranking of him. He's kind of been, like, sitting around 100 for, like, the longest time now, as I'm still a believer in Max Meyer. Like, I don't think he's going to be a frontline guy. So if we're comparing him to, like, you know, the current top guys like a Cade Horton or a Tiedemann or Skeens, someone like that, I don't think he's quite on that level long term. But at the same time, this is a guy that showed the big fastball, you know, really good slider, showed at least some feel for a changeup that had, you know, kind of flashed, you know, above average at times, that could be another third off rating that misses bats if he where that is post-surgery. I don't know. You know, where's the fastball post-surgery? I don't know. We have to wait and see on that, but still plenty of upside there. So I think he's a guy you can absolutely discuss in that second tier. You know, in that second tier that has guys like, you know, the Jackson Jobes of the world and the Robbie Snellings of the world, kind of got that type of tier. I think he's still right in, I mean, probably the back end of that tier, but I'm still pretty in on Meyer. I think he's a good buy low right now. And I think Mason Miller's in that tier as well. I mean, obviously high risk, high reward with Miller. I mean, we've seen it, the dominance. We've seen both ends of it. We've seen the dominance in the minors, dominance in the majors, hitting 102 miles an hour. But that arm is very risky. And you can say that about a lot of young arms these days, but I don't know. I think I've kind of stayed away from Miller a little bit because I think there's too much risk in the profile for me, but the talent is absolutely there. So he's definitely in that second tier as well for me.
Yeah, I mean, they're both very risky arms for different reasons. Well, I mean, I guess the same reason ultimately. I think Max Meyer is more risky because of his frame. I mean, we know he's obviously not pitched in a long time because of surgery, but he's also tiny. And
yeah,
very few starters can have durable, long careers with this frame. It's just a matter of what it is. Like, I mean, how many starters do we see that are under 6 foot and, you know, actually have long careers? Few and far between. And everybody is going to point and say Spencer Strider. Gotcha. I mean, he's been really good. Strider also is different because Strider is on a different level when it comes to his fastball slider combo. I mean, just on another level. And Strider also hasn't shown any health or durability issues since he had TJ in college. I mean, he had TJ early in college, and he's been totally fine since then. Now, not to say Meyer doesn't come back and is totally fine. We don't know. But historically, like I said, with Jet Williams' frame, it doesn't typically fare well for this pitcher, the starting pitcher, to have a frame like Max Meyer. How would I compare him to Mason Miller? Well, a little bit different. I mean, Miller's fastball is on another level. Like I said, with Strider, like Mason Miller's fastball is 98-99, and Max Meyer's fastball is 94-95. That's a major difference. Like when we're talking about, you can get away with a lot more when you throw the ball 98-99 consistently. Max Meyer has an elite slider, and also Mason Miller has a elite slider, in my opinion. So both those pitches are really good, but Miller ultimately has the better fastball, which sets him up a little better. I will be curious to see, like, how much does Max Meyer use the changeup? That was really the biggest question on him as a prospect. Could he throw the changeup enough to be a relevant starter? And if not, like, you know, he goes to the bullpen. I'm afraid, honestly, both these guys have bullpen risk, but yeah. Mason Miller has a better, well-rounded arsenal, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. And that's why I have Mason Miller higher. And right now I have him 75th overall. So that's my pitching prospect 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then Meyer is 119. So he has dropped slightly for me, but that is pitching prospect, big cluster, right around 100, give or take. So he's my pitching prospect 21 right now. But so there's a massive cluster, you know, from 80 to 100 guys like, you know, Drew Thorpe, Brock Porter, Dylan Lesko, Chase Hampton, Chase Petty, all those types. So I think he's kind of like in the back end of that tier. Mill is in the top end of that tier. Maybe there's a, you know, tier break there. Kind of hard to see. But yeah, I still like Meyer. Obviously, there's a lot of risk with both these arms, but we've at least seen, you know, Miller come back. And, you know, again, he's already pitching in the major leagues. We still have to see Meyer next year, what he looks like post-surgery. So definitely Meyer Miller over Meyer, excuse me, right now for me. Next up here, we kind of switched down to the lower levels of the minor leagues. So after each had great years in single A, Gabriel Gonzalez and Carlos Jorge have struggled with their promotions to high A. How do you evaluate guys in that situation going into the offseason? What are your thoughts there, Chris?
I'm honestly not surprised that Carlos Jorge struggled because the contact skills just weren't really there, and he didn't impact the ball all that well. And so this was a concern that I had with him and the reason I was a little hesitant to go too high on him. And now Gabriel Gonzalez is kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum because he is a very high contact hitter. So it is interesting to be like, okay, like what is going on with him? So when you look at Carlos Jorge in the lower level or in single A, his contact rates were not great. I mean, his zone contact rate was sub 80%, which is not ideal, chasing over 30% of the time, and around a 70% contact rate, which just is, it just worries me a bit with that kind of profile. And then we've seen him make this jump, and then it really is, he's gotten a lot worse, honestly. Like, the contact rates have dipped like well into the 60% range. He's striking out over 30% of the time. Like, all these things that you don't really want to see out of a hitter per se. And so I'm nervous about this profile in general because he didn't impact the ball and there was already contact issues. And, you know, the surface numbers I thought were a bit inflated. And so kind of, you know, held him around 100 overall and didn't want to push too high because of that. I mean, we're looking at like sub 100 mile an hour, ninth percentile EV, like a pretty poor average EV, like numbers that just don't inspire a lot of confidence. Now, Gabriel Gonzalez, on the other hand, is somebody that I was a lot more confident in because he's aggressive. So that's one thing. Like, we're talking about a pretty aggressive, free swinging type hitter. So in one sense, like, okay, like you're not surprised that he's getting exploited a bit just because he swings so much. But the contact has always been a major strength in Gabriel Gonzalez's game. And so the interesting thing with him is the power has been really good. That was something that we weren't sure where it would land. But, you know, this ballpark's pretty hitter favorable, so I'm not going to put too much stock in it. But he does have 18 home runs on the year, which is really great to see. And, you know, Gonzalez had the bump after the All-Star break. So he came up, and I won't say he's completely struggled, but the numbers on the surface don't look the best. But I will say the power's been there. The contact has dipped a little bit, but he's still 74% contact rate while swinging a lot. And yeah, ultimately, like, I'm a little bit more confident in him than I am with Carlos Jorge. So I don't know. It's tough to evaluate. Like you said, this is a tough eval, but I will say, like, I'm more confident in the guy that I feel like can make more contact, and that's Gabriel Gonzalez to me. He's shown a little bit more power. He's shown better contact skills. So I'd rather bet on him than Carlos Jorge.
Yeah, no, both these guys are two guys that I had, you know, fairly high, you know, earlier this season, both top 50, both have since obviously dropped down a little bit. And I will say, I'm not going to, you know, drop Jorge too much, given it's been only a 20-game sample,
right,
in high A. But, you know, the concerns you mentioned are valid. Obviously, you know, there's plenty of speed in the profile. I don't know where the approach has gone. He looks like he's pressing too much because it's a guy that's always shown a pretty solid approach, you know, not too much swing and miss. And now there's a lot of swing and miss in the profile, you know, 29 Ks in just 20 games with the high A Dayton. And Gabriel Gonzalez, on the other hand, like, yeah, like you mentioned, like, we didn't know where the power was going to be. And now he's turning into a pretty solid power bat. He doesn't have, you know, the gaudy home run total right now, 18 in 112 games, but, and definitely showing that power is going to be a decent part of his game, not as big of a runner as Jorge is. But, you know, again, his has been a bit of a bigger sample size, 39 games. But again, these aren't massive sample sizes, and both these guys are still young. You know, Gonzalez is 19, will turn 20 early January, and Jorge is still 19 as well, but he'll turn 20 in a couple of weeks here later on in September. So I'm still, you know, fairly in on these guys. I would like to see more contact from Jorge and more impact. But again, even if he's, you know, a 250, 260 guy with, you know, 12 to 15 home runs, you know, he's got that plus speed and the, maybe the Great American, you know, BABIP boost, who knows if he's still there. Obviously, not all these guys are going to be able to play. Some of them are going to get traded or just not work out, obviously. So we'll see if he's still there in a couple of years. Obviously, he's probably more of a 2025 ETA, not going to be up next year. Well, nothing would surprise me anymore with how quickly guys are getting promoted these days. But yeah, it just kind of boils back down to something that, you know, both of us have said time and time again, is just look at the player individually, look at the profile, and make your assessment off of that. You know, don't automatically, you know, discredit what someone's done in low A or whatever, just because they're struggling a bit in high A. Just kind of look at the profile, like look at Jorge's profile, look at Gonzalez's profile. Chris did a great job of breaking them both down. So I think they're both top 100 guys for me still. I think, yeah, I have Gonzalez, you know, let's see, where do I have Gonzalez now? In my current up-to-date rankings here, I have, I should probably just do a control F, make it easier on myself. I have Gabriel Gonzalez. Man, there's a lot of Gabriels in my ranking. There we go. I have him 51. And then Jorge is probably a bit lower than that. Yeah, Jorge is at 65 for me right now. So I still value that speed, and I still think there's a bit more power upside there. But he's a guy I had in the 30s earlier in the year, and he's since dropped there for me. And he, in that mock we did midseason, he went 74th overall. Forget if that was picked by me or not. Can't remember at this point. But I don't have like the full list. I just have like, kind of listed where guys went overall, not who they're picked by. But I still have some faith in both these guys, and especially Gabriel Gonzalez. I think he's a better pure hitter, and you always got to bank on the better pure hit tools. Next up here, can you give some advice for those in shallower dynasty leagues? Prospects tearing it up in low A may not be rosterable in shallow leagues. How do we know when to let go of a struggling prospect to pick up a prospect? You know, and this person gives an example of, I didn't pick up Roman Anthony while holding AJ Smith-Shawver and Class A. That's always a tough one to do, Chris, because obviously in shallower dynasty leagues, you know, obviously guys that are maybe not even top 25, top 50 prospects, you're probably only holding the elite of the elite, and you don't want to be quick to drop someone that you think is elite of the elite. So this has always been, you know, I don't play in too many shallower dynasty leagues like that anymore, but that was something I always kind of struggled with, was, yeah, when do you let a guy go? Like, when do you say, all right, I got to not give up a Class A, but I got to drop him because he maybe isn't turning out like we hoped for, and get a rising guy like Roman Anthony. So where do you kind of find that balance? Like, how do you approach that in shallower dynasty leagues?
I mean, it is tough, but I think in general, like if you can trade, like just churn prospects and just trade them over and over and over, pick up and trade, because the replacement level is so high.
Yeah.
Like I would be trying to wheel and deal all the time in that format if people are looking to take on prospects. But like, I think the landscape has completely changed now, where teams are being so much more aggressive and are pushing prospects faster than ever. So in that sense, I think ultimately you can be more aggressive with the younger guys, because Roman Anthony, yeah, he's still a young 19, but he could debut next year. Like, it's a real possibility that he debuts. So I'm not going to rule that out. They push them quicker. When do you drop guys? And I mean, that's tough. Like, I don't know what to tell you, because, you know, I don't know exactly the specifics of how shallow your league is, but you want to chase upside. I think that's the biggest thing. The shallower the league, the more I'm looking at upside. And so I understand, like, you took an upside shot on Jonathan Class A, because, you know, he was otherworldly to start the year. He's pretty close to being a 2050 guy right now, actually. Yep. And that's only been done in the minors two times ever. Anthony Volpe and Blake Dunn actually did that. He just did it this year. So Class A is a pretty close to hitting that, which is kind of wild. But he was so hot at the beginning of the year, he looked like he could, you know, take off. You know, AJ Smith-Shawver, another prospect, just took off. And so they're tough to figure out, like, when to drop. But I think just with how high the replacement level is, like, you just have to be comfortable churning and knowing there's going to be another pop-up guy every week, most likely. Just pick up and take a chance. And if they don't work out, drop them. Get the next guy.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. Like, just look at, you know, our personal top 25 rankings every month. And there's, you know, there are 3-4 new names that pop up into there. So yeah, that's the beautiful thing, is if you miss out on Roman Anthony, there's another Roman Anthony coming right up behind him. There always is. So that's the thing. You could miss out on guys and still be fine. Like, it's not going to hurt you too much. Like it would in a deeper league. Like if you miss getting a guy for cheap that could become a top guy or something like that. So yeah, definitely agree with that. Next up, how soon does Kobe Mayo make an impact in the majors? If in a win now, do you hold him or use as trade bait? What kind of player should you expect back in a trade? Mayo, unless I get a great return, Mayo is a hold for me right now. You know, hold the Mayo, haha, yeah, all those jokes. But because right now, I don't think the perceived value on Mayo, though it is high, I don't think it's quite high enough. Like, I think Kobe Mayo is a top 10 fantasy prospect. You know, this guy is everything you look for in a, just like a middle of the order masher. Like, I honestly, I could see him being like an Austin Riley type player, a guy that, you know, hits for a solid average, plenty of home runs and all the run production that comes with that. You know, obviously that Baltimore lineup is probably gonna be pretty good for a long time with all the good young talent they have there. And I think Mayo, I mean, he could get called up tomorrow, and it wouldn't shock me. There's not really a spot for him right now, but he's nearly ready for the major leagues. And if he's not up this year, maybe he's up opening day or, you know, early in April next year. And yeah, I think he's making a pretty good impact for you right away. Like, this is a guy that could hit 260 plus with 30 plus home runs and be a middle of the order slugger. And he's improved the approach, you know, trim the K rate down a bit. So yeah, I'm holding. Unless I can get like a top 100 dynasty player right now, I'm pretty much going to be holding Kobe Mayo until he comes up. And then maybe if you want to use him as a sell high piece, then if he gets off to a hot start, sure. But I'm a big believer in Mayo, and I would be holding right now.
Yeah, Mayo's been spectacular. And I think that he is a top 10 prospect. Like, if you love Colt Keith, like, yeah, I think you should also love Kobe Mayo.
They're back to back in my rankings.
Yeah, I think they're pretty similar profiles. And I'm not sure most people agree, but he's just hits the ball incredibly hard. He actually is a pretty solid contact hitter. He doesn't chase. He's very disciplined. He's walked more than he struck out since he moved to AAA. He's young. I don't think we see him this year. I can't say with confidence if he's on the 40 man, but I'm going to look.
I believe he is.
He's not going to come up this year. Like, if he's not, they're not, like, because he can't be on the playoff roster at this point. So, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, he's not on the 40 man. So he's not going to get caught up this year. At this point in the season, though, like, you probably aren't trading. You should not cut him. And if you do trade him, like, if you can trade him in the offseason, then you should be shooting for a high-end win-now player, packaging him with somebody to do so. But I think his impact in the majors probably starts mid-May next year, like mid-May, early June. Pass some of those deadlines for service time, and he's going to be up. I mean, he's shown that he's ready. And so I'm holding Mayo everywhere.
Yeah, so am I. Last one before we take a break. What are the separators between the non-holiday lefty swinging shortstops in your rankings? Love how they put a word of that. And then they put in parentheses, Jackson Merrill, Colson Montgomery, Marcelo Mayer, and Cole Young. What are your thoughts there, Chris?
I think actually the profiles of Colson Montgomery and Jackson Merrill are pretty similar when you look at overall, you know, abilities. Merrill makes more contact, so give him credit there. But when we look at like what kind of fantasy production we're going to get, yeah, I won't be surprised if these two, Jackson Merrill and Colson Montgomery, are all that different, to be honest. You know, I've seen Marcelo Mayer a lot, and he's hurt right now. But honestly, doesn't wow with the bat at all. Like, you know, at this point, to me, I still have questions whether he's like a top 50 fantasy prospect. That's probably like pretty extreme. But he doesn't make the contact. He doesn't hit the ball as hard as Jackson Merrill or Colson Montgomery. And he rolls over a lot. I mean, I've seen him roll over on so many pitches, which is concerning. I mean, somebody that was billed as such a high contact hitter, there have been serious concerns with him making contact. And I saw it last year when he came up, and you give him a pass because last year when he came up to Greenville, he was young. But even early in the year, this year, I mean, still just not what I wanted to see from him. And the last one was Cole Young, that who we're looking at there. Yep. So Young is Jackson Merrill level contact without swinging as much. Like, he doesn't swing hardly any at pitches. So naturally, he's going to walk more than he strikes out. But I don't think the impact's there personally. We've seen 11 home runs from him this year. I would have to look to say for sure. But again, that ballpark that they play in is ridiculously hitter friendly. And so that's also a concern with him. It's like, okay, like how much of this is like ballpark aiding? Because if you've ever looked at like Everett's ballpark, it's like absurd when you look at the dimensions of it. Pull up exactly what the dimensions are, but it's so Funko Field is the most bizarre field. Like it literally fits center field, just like juts in randomly. There's like a center field's like 370, if that tells you anything. So like you can't put much stock into, you know, what he did there. And he did a lot of damage there. Like you look at the splits between the levels, and you know, Cole Young is hit most of his home runs in high A so far, and he's looked really good there. But ultimately, I just don't think he has the kind of fantasy impact that people really hope. And I don't really see the speed as much either. There's stolen bases. Yes, he's stolen 22 bases this year. But I don't think he's a stolen base guy long term, to be honest. And so, yeah, you're looking at plus hit, average power, average speed. It just doesn't profile as like a elite fantasy guy when you can look, in my opinion, and you can see Merrill and Montgomery both have that potential to impact the game with hit and a lot of power. And Mayer has the potential. We just haven't seen it yet. Cole Young's just kind of a different level for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, Cole Young is fourth out of four here. And I do like Cole Young. I've moved him up. I think he's currently gotta be around 60 in the dot. Wow, in my rankings. But that's a good, you know, I think 20, 30 spots behind the rest of these guys. You know, I out of this bunch, I have Jackson Merrill ahead. I think the difference between him, I do think the bat is pretty similar between him and Colson Montgomery. But at the same time, I think Merrill is at least going to add some speed, like maybe be a, you know, 10 to 15 steal guy. Well, I don't quite see that from, you know, Montgomery has not shown that he wants to run much at all. He's probably going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 steals a year, something like that. So I think that is the slight separator between him and Montgomery. But Marcelo Mayer, yeah, I've seen kind of those similar things from him, though I didn't see him quite as much up here in Double A. But I kind of want not give him a pass, but I want to see him, you know, like a fully healthy Mayer next year, kind of see what that looks like. Because, you know, at times he's shown, you know, the ability to be, you know, a top 20 prospect. I don't have him there anymore. I have him currently in, where do I have him? 30 something here, 33 right now. And like, you know, early in the year, I think I had him like 14, 15 peak ranking, probably back in like June or so. But I still see pretty, obviously, all around. Maybe he's a guy that's better real life player than fantasy. That's probably going to be the case. Obviously, he's a very good defender at short. You know, a guy that's probably going to be the long term shortstop for the Boston Red Sox. But like, how impactful is fantasy? How much does he run? You know, probably not going to be more than, you know, 8 to 10 steal guy. How high does the power get? Obviously, as a lefty hitter, you know, Fenway tends to suppress lefty power unless you're Tristan Cassis or David Ortiz, those types of guys. So maybe he gets kind of like the Benintendi Verdugo treatment where, you know, maybe in a neutral park, he could be a 20 homer guy or, you know, 20, 25 homer guy, but maybe is he down in the teens just because, you know, you got to either wrap it around Pesky's pole or you got to put it out in the bullpens, which are like 380. So speaking of weird ballparks, obviously Fenway has got all its weird little dimensions and quirks, yeah, and the triangle and the monster and everything like that. So, yeah, I want to see Mayer. I'm keeping him, you know, keeping him in the 30s. Right, I feel that's appropriate right now. And I want to see next year, you know, give him time to, you know, get 100% healthy in the offseason. And then come in the next year, you know, fully rested, see how he does. And then maybe I'll make a bigger adjustment one way or the other for Mayer. You know, so, and obviously as a Red Sox fan, I'm hoping, but we shall see. I think next year will be a big year one way or the other for his value. But we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Probably going to go a little quicker here in the second half.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Welcome back. Now let's get into the Jason Dominguez questions. Knew there'd be a lot of them right now. The first one here says, with Jason's monstrous first week in the majors, would y'all rather have him than any of the other Jays that were ranked higher than him just a handful of days ago? Jackson Churio. Okay, wait a minute, there's two Jacksons. Jackson Holiday, Jackson Churio, Junior Caminero, Jordan Lawler, or James Wood. Yeah, there's a lot of Jays in the top 10 prospect rankings, that's for sure. You know, for me personally, I could take him over James Wood, absolutely. I think I would, you know, if I redid my rankings now, I think I would probably take Jason over James Wood, especially in the dynasty rankings where, you know, current impact weighs in for me. So I would take him over James Wood. But then again, the other four, I think I still would take above Jason Dominguez right now. And, you know, especially Jackson Holiday, Jackson Churio, yes. Junior Caminero, yes. I think Caminero could be, you know, another Rafael Devers type of player, which is, from a Red Sox fan, that's insanely high praise. And then Jordan Lawler just has such the good all-around profile with all the speed that he brings too. So I think he'll still be slightly more impactful than Jason. But, you know, Jason is going to be very good. Like I tweeted out earlier, he's a better hitter from the left side. Always has been, both in terms of pure hitting ability and his raw power. And if you got to get half your games at Yankee Stadium, like, he's already cranked a home run in the short porch and right. Like, this is a potential 30 homer bat, you know, that could steal 20 plus bags. Like, he's, I never thought he'd be a big speed guy, but he's running. Like, he's showing the willingness to run. That's half the battle. So I think he's going to be an absolute stud, but I think all the other guys are going to be studs too. They all have the potential to be. So I'll take him above James Wood right now, but not quite above the others. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not going to change my opinion on him based on a couple major league games. And I've always liked Jason, and I've kind of stuck my guns with him as a top 25 guy through the ups and downs. I just really like the profile and everything he brought to the table. And I don't want to let a couple of games just change my feelings and rankings completely. So I would say I think he's a top 10 prospect for sure. I think it's probably above James Wood at this point, but I don't think I can go above the other guys. I mean, yeah. Obviously the two Jacksons, no. Caminero's, I'd rather still have Caminero, and then Jordan Lawler as well. It's a no, just because the speed that he brings to the table as well. So yeah, I like Jason, but I don't want to let a couple games just really, you know, change my feelings that much.
Right. No, absolutely. Now, I think you can put Jason as high as 7 right now. I tweeted out not too long ago, I think there's a pretty clear-cut top 6. For me right now, you get the four Jays, Jackson Holiday, Jackson Churio, Junior Caminero, Jordan Lawler, and then the two FYPD guys, Dylan Cruz and Wyatt Langford. That's my top 6 right now. But after that, that next tier, I think you could absolutely put him in there. Like, the next tier has PCA, James Wood, Mayo, Keith, Skeens, Carter, guys like that. I think you can put him as high as 7. And I think I might do that because – you know, who do you like more, like him or a PCA long term?
I mean, they're kind of different, but yeah, I mean, the upside for fantasy, probably got to go Jason.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. I like both the profiles, but yeah, I think I might lean Jason here. And I didn't put enough stock in the power, I think, until I was like, oh yeah, he is a lefty, Yankee Stadium. I don't know why I didn't put as much stock into that as I probably should have. During my last update, but yeah, he's absolutely a top 10 guy now for sure. That kind of leads into the next one here. Is Jason Dominguez a sell high guy? You know, Chris and I have both preached, you know, the ideal times to sell high on a prospect or a young player, and Jason Dominguez absolutely is in one of those. So you could say yes to this question, Chris, but at the same time, it's not like I'm a non-believer in Jason. Like, I think there's a lot of potential here. So unless I was getting like a really good return, like maybe like a top 75 overall asset back, I'd probably hold just to see where this goes, because he could build even more value moving forward.
Yeah, I think the hype's crazy high. And if I were to sell him, like, I'm probably looking for a top 50 dynasty asset, to be honest, just because, I mean, for a player that was hyped when he signed, for the, you know, the caliber of hype that was, to the ups and downs, is that to now how hot he started, like, I think you have to shoot for the moon here.
Yeah.
And try to get something insanely high. So, like I said, I don't think he's like, you have to sell high, but if you get it all, like, anybody's to sell high at the right cost, I guess, depending on what you get. And so if I got a top 50 dynasty asset, yeah, then he's a sell high, in my opinion.
All right. What if you got, I'm trying to look at some outfielders in that range for me. There's actually, what if you got Christian Yelich? Would you do it then?
That's interesting. I don't know. That one actually makes me think about that, at least. And golly, I don't really know. I think so. But again, you look at the downs that Yelich has had and just hasn't been great.
Yeah, I'm trying to find another. Like, all the outfielders in this range to me are like prospects. It's like, that's where I have like Langford and Cruz and Churio and all these guys. I'm kind of like a major league guy. You know, Cedric Mullins, I probably not. Brian Reynolds, I mean, maybe, I don't know, probably not there either. Maybe like, I don't know, like a Randy Arozarena. Would you take a Arozarena right now?
Yeah, I think I'd take, even with his struggles, I think Arozarena's been so consistent. Like, you know what you're getting year in, year out, and I'd take that.
How about like a Riley Green? Probably take Green there too.
Yeah. I like the upside of Green.
Yeah.
But in reality, I mean, how dissimilar of players could they be long term? Like, you know, and you look at the ballpark too, like Riley Green's in a terrible park to hit. And then you have Jason, who's in a great park to hit. So, yeah, that's silly something to consider.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Real quick before we move on to the next question, where do you have Jason in your dynasty rankings right now, Chris?
Probably not nearly high enough. I feel like he was around 150 in my last update. That's been a few weeks. I'm right around 150. So,
is he top 100 now for you? Do you think?
I think you have to at least consider that. Like, looking at the names, like around there, like, yeah, I mean, should he be high? Like, I have Kobe Mayo 105. Like, I think he's got to be above Mayo.
Yep.
I have PCA 100. Like, got to be above PCA at this point. So.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm right there with you.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, I have PCA 125. I have Mayo 98 right now. Yeah, so I currently have, right now, I'm still tinkering with it, obviously, so this probably changes from my next update. But I have Jason 87 right now, kind of right in the similar range with Evan Carter. He's a few spots above Evan Carter, another, you know, guy that's debuting soon here. Actually, do you want to get into that real quick? Like Carter, and I know it's not in, you know, the outline here, but, you know, kind of feel like we got to talk at least a little bit about Evan Carter and Jordan Lawler getting the call over the last couple of days here. We don't have to go super deep into it, but what are your expectations for each of these guys for the rest of the season and long term?
It's interesting. Honestly, like, I don't know. I don't have super high expectations for Carter. He's had an up and down year. He's had an injury. I still like the profile long term, but for like redraft leagues, like, I'm not like, you know, breaking the bank on him or anything. Like, it's just, you know, I don't think that's the move to make. Like, Lawler at least brings like the high end stolen base potential, and that can be a game changer down the stretch. Like, when I look at Evan Carter's profile, he seems like a more of a OBP type play, and he's not going to be like one of these flashy guys that goes on, you know, huge heaters in a week and just like absolutely dominates. But I think like Evan Carter's value comes from him being a compiler throughout the year, while Lawler could come out and hit you 3 home runs and steal 5 bags in a week and be huge for you. So
right.
That's the difference in the profile. I think I'd rather bank on Lawler in the short term and long term, but I do like Evan Carter in the long term for sure.
Yeah, no, I think I'm right there with you. I've always been a big Lawler guy, and he's a guy I wanted to rank higher. You know, he's a guy that could be number one overall fantasy prospect, but it's just so hard to jump over the, you know, the Junior Cameron Arrows, the Jackson Cheerios, guys like that. So he's definitely top tier for me, and I've always been a big Lawler guy dating back to when I was ranking him for FYPD purposes. Yeah, so I definitely think there's a more immediate and long-term impact for him, but at the same time, I still do like Carter a bunch. But yeah, for this year, I think there's a bigger gap. Yeah, I don't see Carter, and I could be wrong, you know, he could go up and tear the cover off the ball, but I would definitely give a bigger edge to Lawler in the short term over the long term too. All right, back to the questions here. A little sidebar there. Much too early draft 2024. Where do you see the September/late season rookies and prospects going? And they listed, you know, Jason, Ronnie Mauricio, Nolan Jones. So he wasn't really late season, but Jordan Lawler, Sadon Rafaela, top 50, top 100, top 150. I mean, depends on how they end the season, obviously, but I could see, I don't think any of these guys go top 50. Let me just put that right out right now. Top 100, you know, Jason keeps tearing cover. I think Jason and Lawler have top 100 potential in ADP next year. You know, Nolan Jones has been really good, still striking out a bit too much for my liking, though. I think the rest could be top 150, though. Probably not Rafaela, just because he's not playing much at all. I think he said one start in the last week, more so coming in pinch hit, pinch run, defensive replacement type of guy right now. So I think his ADP will be the lowest of these bunch, but I could see, you know, if Ronnie keeps, you know, he's had a lot of hard contact early on. I think Ronnie and Jones could get in that top 150 ADP discussion, and maybe top 100 for Jason and Lawler. What are your thoughts there, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, certainly with the hype around Jason, like, he will probably be top 100 if the performance is just good rest of the way. Like, he's been insane to start, but if he's just good the rest of the way, I think he's a top 100 guy. I think Lawler too, unless Lawler is just terrible, then I think that name value and prospect hype probably keeps him top 100. I don't think Nolan Jones gets there. He's a massive sleeper. I wrote him up today. He's really good. He's had an awesome performance. So he's not going to go top 100. I think he's more like a top 200 guy, but I think he's a good value.
Yeah.
And Ronnie Mauricio, him and Sadon Rafaela kind of fall in a similar boat where they're both highly aggressive chasers. Obviously, Ronnie brings a lot more power to the table. Rafaela brings more speed to the table. So different in those senses. But when you look at the fantasy type production, it's kind of a trade off because Ronnie does provide speed too, and Rafaela does provide some power too. So it all depends on performance. I'd guess that neither are top 200. That caveat being, if they perform really well in September, then they could end up being top 150 guys. But I'm pretty comfortable saying Jason and Lawler are top 100 guys next year, unless something crazy happens.
Yeah, yeah, I'm definitely right there with you on that. Next question here. Rank the rookie catchers long term. Francisco Alvarez, Yainer Diaz, Andy Rodriguez, Bo Naylor, Logan Ohapi, Patrick Bailey, Corey Lee. This person adds, I know focus will be on fantasy/offense, but hopefully some discussion on D of defense is important, given questions about who actually stays at catcher long term. So for me, I think my top three here are Alvarez, Ohapi, and Yainer Diaz, and then slight drop to Endy and Naylor, and then another drop down to Bailey and Lee. And I think most of these guys, I question Endy the most here, Chris, of who sticks at catcher long term. We'll see, but I think there's a decent chance they all stay there, at least for the time being. Alvarez, obviously, I think is pretty clear cut number one here for me. Huge power. We'll see where the average ends up. That's the questions I always have had with Alvarez. Still have, is like, how much of average will he hit for? But we, you know, we've seen that the power can be very impactful there. And Yainer Diaz has been quietly just one of the better fantasy catchers on a per game basis this year. Just hasn't quite gotten the, you know, he's gotten more playing time over the last few months, but it's overall, you know, Martin Maldonado has been getting a lot of the reps there. So yeah, I think pretty clear top three for me are Alvarez, Yainer, and Ohapi, who I still think is very undervalued. Like, this is a really good all-around catcher, and I think the value is obviously still suppressed from him missing so much time this year, but I think he's a great buy low. I think Yainer Diaz is still a good value target. I just kind of question Indy a little bit now. Like, how much power does he add? But I don't know. What are your thoughts here on these guys?
Yeah, I mean, from a pure fantasy standpoint, I think that Alvarez is the best. I do have questions about his ability to catch long-term because of his body. I mean, we don't know how the body's going to age, but I mean, he's 5'10", like 240. It's just not a great body, to be honest right. with you. And so, like, I have concerns about, like, that lower half, and ultimately, does he have the ability to stick back there? Now, Yainer Diaz actually is pretty solid behind the plate. His framing scores are not good, but he's pretty solid overall, and framing is not going to matter as much, I don't think. I think we'll see the challenge system implemented next year. I don't think we ever go to full ABS because we've seen the disaster that – I don't say it's a disaster, but the walk rates in AAA on the days that ABS are used are absolutely insane. So, yeah, I think that Yainer Diaz can stick back there. Indy's so versatile. Like, they could choose to use him kind of wherever. But I will say with Indy that they've let Henry Davis play elsewhere, and they've kind of stuck with their guns with Indy at catcher, which is obviously shows what they're thinking about him at least. So I think that they kind of see Indy as the guy back there. At least it seems to me. Patrick Bailey is obviously like the best defensive of this list, like defensive catcher. So when you look at that standpoint, I mean, he's been a pleasant surprise, I will say. Like, he's been really, really good back there behind the plate. Bo Naylor is like an average catcher in the field. Naylor obviously hasn't shown a ton at the plate this year, but the skills are there for sure. Ohapi is one that I think is an awesome buy right now. Like, I love Logan Ohapi. And I really think that Logan Ohapi is one that probably doesn't get the love that he really deserves, in my opinion. And especially coming off injury, like, I think he's a great buy low. Even though he had torn labrum, those aren't ideal. Like, I think he may be the best buy of anybody in this group for fantasy purposes. And I actually like the move a lot for Corey Lee going to Chicago. Like, White Sox don't have anybody in the pipeline at catcher. And Corey Lee's actually a really good defensive catcher. So that helps his case a lot. The bat's kind of like, whatever. I think that's why Houston was kind of comfortable just, you know, trading him, because they had depth and, you know, he's just whatever with the bat. But his catching ability is really solid. But for fantasy purposes, I'd say he's at the bottom of this list, even though I do think he's going to be the guy next year. I really think I think the White Sox called him up this month to see what he has in order to be their catcher of the future. And we'll see. It'll be fun to see how it plays out.
Yeah, the White Sox definitely made a focus on kind of shoring up the position long term, you know, getting him via trade, getting Edgar Cairo via trade too. So we'll see how that situation shakes out. But yeah, I think offensively, I've never been super high on Corey Lee. And in regards to Alvarez, you know, I've seen Alvarez live, and yep, he's every bit of that 5'10", 245 frame for sure. So it's still a question. Maybe he's more of like a TH long term, but hopefully he still catches at least enough to retain that eligibility moving forward. All right, got a few more questions here. Do you think Zach Geloff is real? I don't, but I'd like to hear y'all's opinion. Also, is Julian a stud? Yes, answers only. Well, with Julian, I mean, I'm not saying no answers here, but I don't think Julian's a stud. Like, there's still some issues with him. If he can hit lefties, and, you know, still a bit too passive, but do I think Julian could be an impact fantasy second baseman, like a top 10 caliber fantasy second baseman? Absolutely. We've seen the tools there for him to be that. Obviously, the power, even though he doesn't swing as much as he probably should, we've seen pretty solid power from him this year, 12.5% barrel rate, 45% hard hit. But the passivity is kind of leading to a higher K rate right now, 31.3%. Which has always been kind of the issue. Still hits too many ground balls. So still some tweaks to be made for him, but the potential for an impact bat is absolutely there. And with Geloff, he definitely surprised me earlier this year, and I underranked him for sure. But at the same time, like, he was a clear sell high earlier this year, because when he was, like, you know, coming up and had like a, was it a 40-40 pace or whatever it was?
Yeah.
It was so his absurd. First month, like, you know, the whiff rate was too high. The zone contact rate was too low. You know, a lot of stuff like that, that was kind of like, eh, I think it's going to come back down to earth. And sure enough, it has. But again, I think he could be still be a solid impact player as well. He's shown a decent power speed blend this year. Maybe he's not going to be, you know, more than like a 250, 260 hitter long term, but I think there's a potential for a decent fantasy player there too. So I guess I'm not saying yes or no to these questions, but you know, I think there's upside with both these guys, but also some flaws about these guys as well.
Yeah, if you can sell Geloff still, I would. The sell high window is gone, because over his last 20 games, he's got a 364 slug. And this was no surprise that he came crashing down. I hope that you didn't fully buy into what Geloff was doing. I tried to kind of warn people that this was not who Geloff was. Like, he was on an absurd pace. And, you know, I think we both took some flack for that, saying like, okay, like, pump the brakes a bit. And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, we're right off, you know, the last 20 games. But it is worth noting. I mean, the last 20 games, 234, 294, 364 slash, two home runs over that span. That's just not good. That's an 84 WRC plus. It's not ideal at all. His plate discipline metrics are not good by any means. He's chasing. He doesn't make enough contact. Like, he's running over those last 20 games a 15% swinging strike rate. Those just aren't things that you really want in a player. And so it was fun. Like, it was really fun to see him go off like he did. But I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be a viable fantasy guy in like 15 team leagues. But Geloff's not going to be somebody that I'm drafting next year at all, because I feel like his people are just going to look at the overall picture when he tore it up and boosted the numbers so much that they're going to draft him much higher than I'd like. And I think his dynasty stock is firmly in sell territory for me and not buy by any means. And Julian, I don't know. I mean, Julian's fine. I don't think that Edward Julian is somebody that I'm like insanely high on. I mean, he's very passive. He plays better in an OBP league. I mean, we even joked about it, because he wasn't swinging at pitches in the AFL Home Run Derby last year. Like, you talk about passive, and the dude's taking pitches at a Home Run Derby where it's just time. And right. It's, you know, you have to swing the bat, and he's taking pitches. Like, what are we doing here, man? And that's a legit, you know, legit thing. So I don't know. I mean, he's got 30% K rate since the All-Star break. And while the 400 OBP is nice, he just has a 407 slug, not impacting the ball like you'd want to see. And so I think it's kind of a mixed bag with Julian and what you should expect and what you're actually going to get. The contact skills are good. He's just too passive, and he just doesn't impact the ball enough, in my opinion, or ideal launch angles, I'll say, to really go off. He hits the ball hard. So, like, don't hear me out and say that he's not, you know, he's not hitting the ball hard enough. He's hitting the ball hard, but he's running too high of a ground ball rate. He's just not hitting enough fly balls to get to home runs. I mean, since the All-Star break, he has a 23.5% home run to fly ball rate, which is actually really high. Like, that's not a number that I'd expect to sustain. And for the season, that's 27.5%. That's not a sustainable number by any means. And he still just has 11 home runs and 323 plate appearances. So, I don't know. Like, Julian's fine, but it's not like I'm crazy about him.
Yeah, I kind of have the same feeling. You know, there's slightly different profiles, though a lot of similarities too. Like, him and like Nolan Gorman, I think they're, you know, I think Gorman's obviously a little bit more raw power, maybe a little bit higher average upside for Julian, but they're probably going to be both guys that are like, you know, top 10 second baseman at that point in time. Then they go into a huge funk here too. So that's kind of where I value Julian long term. Next one here. What hope is there for Matt Mervis? Is he a quad A player at this point? I can see why somebody would say that, but I'm not even remotely ready to go quad A player on Mervis. I mean, he hasn't really, you know, he had a chance already, but he hasn't gotten that second chance yet, and probably won't happen this year at this point. But I still hold out hope. That I've seen the power firsthand. It's real. Like, there's legit 30 plus home run power there. Maybe it's not more than like a 250 ish hitter, but even that guy like that can have some value. Maybe he's in like the Rhys Hoskins territory long term. I think that's still a viable outcome for Mervis. I think he's actually a buy low right now. I think that first taste, you know, of the major leagues earlier this year left a sour taste in a lot of, you know, fantasy managers' mouths. But, and I don't think he's going to be like a top 10 fantasy first baseman, but maybe he's a guy that's, you know, top 15 fantasy first baseman or something like that, because the power is still there. And he's shown a decent walk rates throughout his minor league career. He's got to trim the K rate down. That's been the issue for him with the Cubs. But, you know, I'm definitely not even remotely close to throwing that quad A label on him yet. He hasn't really had that second chance. If he comes up and struggles again, maybe we can start talking about that, but I don't think it's time yet.
Yeah, I mean, Mervis is, I don't know. I'm not ready to say that he's a quad A player. There's certainly quad A players show massive struggles, even in AAA, like we've seen with Adele. I mean, you look at Adele, and yeah, he hits the ball hard. He's going to hit home runs in AAA. He still doesn't make contact. And, you know, Mervis is still making enough contact to actually be a passable bat. And then he was a really good bat last year. Like, Mervis was the breakout of breakouts, in my opinion. Like, he was one of the most fun players to watch take off. But this year, obviously, we didn't get the results we wanted, but he's still hitting the ball hard. He's still barreling the ball. Contact numbers are actually pretty respectable when we look. He's still running at 84% zone contact, 70% overall, not what you'd like, but it's still passable. And when you're at 84% zone, you can live there too. I mean, for reference, like when we're looking at Joe Adele in AAA, I mean, he's below 80% zone contact and he's below 70% overall contact, and he's striking out 27% of the time. So different caliber, different type of player, and I'm not ready to deem Matt Mervis a quad A player by any means.
Yeah, same. Two more here. Basically, this one is centered around who will be the Rays' shortstop, and asking if Taylor Walls could be that guy. I don't think so. I think Walls is kind of going to stay in the role he is, kind of like that utility player, backup infielder, spot start type of guy. But who will be the shortstop for the Rays? I don't know. I mean, there's several options. Obviously, I don't think it's going to be Wander Franco, but, you know, Junior Caminero. But I don't really see him as a shortstop long term. He has played, you know, a decent amount of shortstop, played a little bit more third base, which is where I see him more. But that's an option. Carson Williams, I think maybe the, you know, if we're looking at like 5 years out, I think Carson Williams might be the leader in the clubhouse for who will be the starting shortstop. I think I like him overall more than I like a guy like Oslivas Basabe, who came up and had some time there after Franco went out with his issues legally. So I think it might be Carson Williams, but I don't know. Who knows? I don't think the Rays are going to bring in anybody. Obviously, that's not really their motto, bringing like a big name shortstop or any big name players for that matter. They always develop from within. So I think it's going to be Carson Williams. I think that could be a really fun left side of the infield with him and Junior Caminero probably at the hot corner long term.
Yeah, I mean, Caminero is going to be a third baseman, in my opinion. And, you know, Carson Williams is the guy long term. It's not Taylor Walls. But I do think Oslivas Basabe will be most likely the guy that we see in there, probably to start next year. You're already seeing him in that role right now. And he's a slick fielder. He's got a good enough bat. And so I think that ultimately Basabe will be better than Walls. I know Walls has come back from injury and he looks like he's, you know, taking some of the reps. They're going to play, they're going to interchange just to kind of see what they got, in my opinion. They're going to play the hot hand, you know, especially as contenders. Like, they're trying to win the division and get in the playoffs. So they're going to be rolling out the hot hand rest of the season. I think Basabe is likely the guy until Carson Williams is ready, though. Caminero is not going to play shortstop, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think he's third baseman. So, yeah, I think we agree there. Caminero at third and Carson Williams at short, and probably see him maybe second half of next year. I think he could be up later next year. We'll see. ending on a fun one here for each of you. Who will be the top five prospects in baseball by the end of 2024? So kind of we're looking basically a full year out here. I guess the first is look at the top of our rankings here. You know, I think Holiday by end of 2024 has graduated. Churio should have as well. Caminero as well. Lawler, PCA, Dominguez, etc. Do we think Cruz and Langford have graduated by then? Probably. What would you put the chances of Cruz and Langford not being prospect eligible by the end of 2024? Probably above 50%?
Yeah, I don't think that either are prospect eligible by the end of 2024. Yeah. This is a tough question because with the rate we're seeing players promoted, it makes it really hard. I mean, I think that everybody in my top 10 has graduated. I really do. I think every single player in my top 10 has graduated by the end of 2024. The first one that I don't think will have been graduated will be Colson Montgomery. He's the highest ranked player that I don't think graduates next year. But I will, this is so hard because the way that prospects are moving now, I don't know. I will say I'll just go out a limb and just go crazy here. My top five prospects by the end of 2024 are Walker Jenkins, Roman Anthony, Colson Montgomery. Oh man, this is where it gets kind of hard. Like, who won't have graduated?
I know that's what I'm looking at too.
I mean, Adiel Amador is interesting. Like,
yeah, I looked at him. Actually, the first three I looked at were Jenkins, Roman Anthony, and Adiel Amador.
Yeah,
I have them all in my top 20 right now. I think you could see, you know, he's been struggling a little bit lately, but I think you could see Max Clark in that range. I think he definitely has the potential to be in that range. For me, you know, you've always been higher on Montgomery than I like Montgomery a decent bit. I don't think he'll be top five, at least not for me. But I'm having a hard time figuring out a fifth here. I mean, kind of scrolling down. I mean, guys that have potential to, you know, Walcott has potential to get up there. I don't know, Lazaro Montes, I don't think, maybe not. I don't know. Montes has made a lot of good improvements this year. You know, Xavier Isaac is a guy that I think is going to continue to shoot up. Chase DeLauder, Matt Shaw. I don't know. Harry Ford, if he puts it all together, he's like slowly starting to put it together, but not all at the same time. These are all guys that could. Carson Williams, I don't know if he gets that high. Same with Owen Casey. No pitcher. Maybe Paul Skeens, but he's probably graduated at the end of 2024 as well. So I think any other names I see that could jump up that high. I mean, not seeing any other names right now that I think could, but then again, you know, I'll put a dark horse here. Just a fun pick that, you know, a guy I could only have in the back end of my top 100. Maybe Eduardo Quintero with the Dodgers there. He's got a lot of fun tools. Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm going to stop my list, though. I don't really see any other guys. But who knows? There's always that pop-up guy or two or a guy that shoots up to that ranks that we didn't think could every year. So I'm sure we'll see that again next year. But, yeah, so I guess those are all the guys I think that at least have a chance of doing that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Joindre Vargas is a guy I like. You mentioned
Quintero. Oh, yes.
I like Vargas a lot. So either of those could really vault up.
Yeah, that's one I probably should have mentioned, too. I like him a lot, too, for sure. Where do I have Joindre Vargas? He's in this row. Where did he go? A quick look up here. 85. There you go. Oh, not too far behind Quintero. I probably should move him ahead of Quintero. I really like Quintero a lot. The Dodgers just have a never-ending supply of great prospects. It's hilarious. They graduate a bunch, and then trade away a bunch, and they still got a bunch more coming up through. But I think we had a couple of similarities there with Jenkins, with Roman Anthony, with Adiel Amador. Maybe he graduates by then. I think it's 50-50, and whether he does or not, we'll see. It's the Rockies, so who knows. But, yeah, so I think that's going to wrap us up, though. Thanks, everyone, who that submitted questions. I think we might have missed one or two, but we didn't go too long on time here. So if we missed your question, we apologize. But thank you to everyone that submitted questions. There were a lot of fun ones today. And thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. Again, this episode, we hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com. for more for each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.